Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Nagging criticism on the economy and Iraq policy are taking their toll on President Bush's political standing, according to a new ABC News Washington Post poll. The poll says that nearly 6 in 10 Americans call U.S. casualties in Iraq unacceptable, more than double its level at last April's fall of Baghdad, and most continue to disapprove on his handling of the economy. More than 8 in 10 continue to see the alleged White House leak of CIA operatives' identity as a serious matter, and the number who think the administration is fully cooperating in the investigation is down to 39%. The person responsible for analyzing the Iraqi weapons threat for Colin Powell says the Secretary of State misinformed Americans during his speech at the UN last February. Greg Thielman tells the CBS program 60 Minutes 2 that at the time of Powell's speech, Iraq didn't pose an imminent threat to anyone, not even its own neighbors. Thielman said the decision to go to war was made first, and then the intelligence was interpreted to fit that conclusion, saying senior administration officials used faith-based intelligence. Another UN inspector, Steve Allenson, told of a dozen UN inspectors watching Powell's speech and laughing at various times because the information he was presenting, quote, had no meaning. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is planning to cut at least 100 of the nation's 425 military bases in 2005, shutting down more military bases than in the four previous rounds of closures combined. Rumsfeld will submit to the Congressional Base Closure and Realignment Commission a plan to shutter as many as one-third of Army bases, one-quarter of Air Force bases, and a smaller percentage of Marine Corps and Navy bases. Such a proposal would guarantee a political firestorm on Capitol Hill. At least half of House Democrats will vote against President Bush's $87 billion spending request for Iraq and Afghanistan this week, and others plan to support it under protest. The bill is expected to pass both houses with Republican support, but its price tag has dampened enthusiasm on both sides of the aisle. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had, and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK, 1-800-NATPARK. There's just too much to lose.
A Nevada man was feeling so wealthy after he allegedly stole $90,000 from an elderly woman that he decided to pay off a year's worth of his rent. He tried to pay it off in $50,000 cash to his landlord, a Reno police officer. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin.
The great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You've probably never heard of Mr. Wally Odell or of his corporation, Diebold, Inc. But Odell and his firm are reaching out and touching you and millions of your fellow Americans in a most fundamental way. Diebold has become one of America's largest sellers of touchscreen computer voting equipment. Most states have converted from real ballot boxes to these virtual systems provided by outfits like Diebold. Instead of physically marking your ballots, now you touch the screen to make your choices and, supposedly, the touchscreen technology magically transfers your vote into cyberspace. But what about real space? Growing numbers of Americans are alarmed by evidence that these computerized systems can be easily manipulated to steal our votes. Various organizations of computer professionals have called for stringent new reforms to protect our precious right of voting from the thieves who would loot our votes from these untraceable cyber boxes. Public concern has been heightened by revelations that the biggest providers of digital voting technology are strong partisans and major backers of the Republican Party. At the top of this list is Odell. He's had security concerns raised about his voting computers, even as he has been soliciting big donations for the election of George W. In August, Wally jetted down to Bush's ranchette in Crawford, Texas, for a presidential powwow with GOP fundraisers who have committed to raising big bucks for Bush's campaign. The very next week, Odell sent out letters asking for $10,000 donations for the Republican Party. And only one day later, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio blessed Wally's company with official authorization to provide electronic voting machines in Ohio. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn how you can help to stop electronic voting fraud, go to www.verifiedvoting.org.
The chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations all across this great nation, broadcasting live on the Internet on several different radio stations on the Internet, radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, this network station. I want to mention, by the way, that radiopower.org is supported by listener donations, and it's one of the better sites out there. I just want to encourage you to check it out and to help them out in their campaign this fall. And also, we're live coming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, Stream 145. Today, there is so much today. Our quote for the day from five-star general, and former president Dwight D. Eisenhower, April 16, 1953. He said, "Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, from those who are cold and are not clothed. The world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children." Now, and we're going to hear a little more from Mr. Eisenhower and from other war hero presidents, but here's one of our war hero presidents, his thoughts on this, and then I want to get into this question of, how could the militarization of American society affect the future of democracy? What is this all about? What is going on here? What is the history of it? And what are the future consequences of it?
We owe our military every weapon you need, every dollar it takes to fight and to win this war.
Yeah, give them everything they need, every dollar they want.
Earlier this year, I proposed the largest increase in military spending since Ronald Reagan was the president.
And that, you know, brought great cheers. And might that be a good thing or a bad thing? I'm certainly not in favor of leaving our country defenseless. There are, you know, this is a world where there are crazy people out there. There are people who do not share our interests, do not share our values, and might covet our property.
And this has always been the case in the United States. And so how do we appropriately handle defense in the United States? By the way, our chat room is open and alive. If you'd like to drop in, alive and well, a bunch of folks in there are already having a conversation about some of the and some interesting new tips. You can find that by going to TomHartmann.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com and just click on the chat room links. Here's what Dennis Kucinich had to say in response to George W. Bush's comments that we should just hand Rummy. Keep in mind, Donald Rumsfeld, before he became Secretary of Defense, immediately before he became Secretary of Defense, his job was as a lobbyist for the Star Wars part of the military-industrial complex. He was lobbying for these trillion-dollar defense, boondoggles.
Yet the Pentagon budget grows with more monies for weapons systems to fight a Cold War which ended, weapons systems in search of new enemies to create new wars. This has nothing to do with fighting terror. This has everything to do with fueling a military-industrial machine with the treasure of our nation, risking the future of our nation, risking democracy itself, and the militarization of thought, which follows militarization of the budget.
Yes, well said, Dennis Kucinich. So he brings up this issue of the military-industrial complex and the whole militarization of thought in America. And we're certainly seeing that right now. We're seeing a rapid militarization of the United States. The president prefers to refer to himself as commander-in-chief. That's just one of his many titles, but it happens to be the military one. Militarization is a whole process by which a civil society becomes a military society. And history shows that when this happens, very toxic things, very destructive things happen. It happened in Hitler's Germany, for example. It happened in Mussolini's Italy. It happened in the Roman Empire. This has great dangers associated with it. You get this hyped-up machismo, as greatly, cartoonishly exaggerated masculinity in society. And tough, masculine figures become the heroes of the day, the ones that everybody is drawn to. The army hypes itself, this new Army of One and ad campaign, a unified social order consisting of rugged individualists. You see, historically, militarism was a class thing. In Western Europe, the knights were the upper class, the military. There was a military elite, which the founders in this country very much wanted to prevent, which is why they put the military under the control of civilians in our government. And in Chinese society, it was the other way around. The military was at the bottom of the pecking order. It was sort of the employer of last resort. So you've seen both in the world. But in liberal democracies, the experience has been that it's important to have all classes of society involved in the military, which is why I personally think that we should have a draft or national service provision, and why the vast majority of Western democracies all around the world, or full democracy, what you might call modern liberal democracies around the world, do have that sort of thing. But what is the history of this thing? This idea that authority should not be questioned, that individuals should be hardened to human suffering, that war becomes its own justification. Right? We've seen this in Iraq. We said, we're going after weapons of mass destruction, imminent threat. And then it turns out there's no imminent threat. Well, he's got weapons. That might be a threat. Okay, it turns out he doesn't have weapons. Well, we're going after Saddam. He's an evil guy. I can't find Saddam. Now we're there to help to protect the Iraqi people, prevent chaos. Well, invade any country in the world and you're going to have to protect its people after you've invaded them. The only justification that we're left with now, it seems, is to support our troops. And even that's getting kind of thin because our troops increasingly, the form letters coming back aside, are speaking out and saying, we're scared to death over here. And we're not sure that this is really worth the price of American blood. So what's the history of this whole militarization? Dwight Eisenhower laid it out, and I think this will come as I played this earlier in the year, so some of you may have heard this clip, but it's really worth revisiting. And I know we have several new stations on just in the very recent past, in fact, over 20. And we've got a number of new listeners. I want to, and it's worth revisiting. This is extraordinary. This is Dwight Eisenhower explaining how the military-industrial complex came to be. Most people don't realize, most of us living today don't realize that when he gave this speech back in 1961, as I recall, this was his farewell address. So it was just before Kennedy took office. That prior to that time, There had been no military industry, permanent military industry in the United States, as Eisenhower explains.
Our military organization today bears little relation to that known of any of my predecessors in peacetime, or indeed by the fighting men of World War II or Korea. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry.
See, what we had was a domestic production industry. We had like General Motors making cars, and when the war came, they started making tanks. We had Boeing making airplanes, and when the war came, they started making fighter planes. But they were non-military industries that could shift to military in time of war and then shift back, as they had during the Civil War, as they had during the War of 1812, as they had during World War I. And it wasn't until the end of World War II and the Cold War that things changed, as Dwight Eisenhower explains.
American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions.
And the proportions are truly vast. And what amazes me is that you see so few statistics these days about the dimensions of the American military-industrial complex. When Dwight Eisenhower laid it out, it was much smaller than it is now, both in terms of actual dollars and in terms of percentage of the economy. Hear what he has to say.
Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society.
And our society has changed so much that now we have a defense secretary who was a lobbyist for the military-industrial complex. We see federal spending, in discretionary federal spending, the amount that we spend to reduce our reliance on oil, $2 billion. Head Start program, $7 billion. Humanitarian foreign aid, $10 billion prior to Iraq. Kindergarten through 12 education at the federal level, we spend $34 billion. Children's health, $41 billion. And then we leap up to the Pentagon, $400 billion. Now, compare that with the spending of other nations around the world. We spent $400 billion, and all of our allies together, all the countries of Western Europe together, all of the NATO allies spent $225 billion, a total of $624 billion. Compare that to Russia that spends $65 billion, or China that spends $47 million, or the entire axis of evil that spends $7 billion. Eisenhower goes on with his thoughts about these sorts of things.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
Now, the militarized side, the super hyper pump up macho side, the militarization of the citizenry, you know, going out and saying highway workers are now foot soldiers in the war on terrorism, as George Bush has said, or truck drivers are the latest soldiers in the war on terrorism. You know, whenever he addresses groups, he tries to militarize them. When you're a soldier, you're no longer a citizen. Soldiers obey commands. Citizens engage in discussions. We have these color-coded terrorist alerts to keep the citizenry in a state of panic. And the whole psychology becomes, if you're not somehow super gung-ho military, you must be a pacifist wuss. So I want to share a little bit more right after the break with you of what Eisenhower and John Kennedy had to say about these topics as we get into some more detail about what's happening in America right now. with the militarization of this nation. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. We'll be right back.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
So you've graduated from college, got a new job, a new place to live, even a new dog, but you're still paying the same old high-interest student loans. Well, we can help. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE, anytime, 24-7. We're College Loan Corporation, and we're dedicated to helping you refinance your college loans with interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. Get on with your new life and call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the chart.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24-7, yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by with goodwill and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone. This is Tom Hartman bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle, helping you win the water cooler wars. Oh, wars, there's that word again. How could the militarization of American society affect the future of democracy? We're seeing the militarization of our culture. Paintball is one of the fastest growing sports in America. Now, I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. I remember when I lived in Atlanta, a bunch of friends of mine were doing it, and I thought this would be fun, and I didn't do it because I was just so busy. But I probably, you know, and I anyway. It's in San Diego, players can pay an extra $50 to hone their skills at Camp Pendleton Marine Base. The military is present in television spots, print ads. They have a heavy web presence. JROTC programs have increased dramatically since the early 1990s. Although I have a feeling that right now they may be slipping. Well, it's hard to say. I think what's probably slipping is people who are volunteering for the National Guard. They thought that they were just here to defend, you know, help out during floods and things. Military recruiters have invaded our public school system. The No Child Left Behind Act had a little backdoor booby hatch in it that nobody realized that said that schools are required to give military recruiters information on their students. You've got some schools that are engaged in legal battles with the government right now over this. Fox News Channel flashes alerts for even the most mundane Defense Department briefings. I mean, the militarization of the presidency, I mean, it's just on and on and on. It's like this hyped-up machismo. Here, testosterone. Yes, it's the greatest drug ever. Well, what would a true warrior, a five-star general, the leader of all the Allied forces against Hitler in Europe, and the President of the United States, a true patriot and military man, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and a true conservative, by the way, he would be in utter disgust at what is going on in Washington at this moment, but we'll get to that in a moment. But what would he say about this? Is peace for wusses? Is that all it is?
During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect.
What?
Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose.
Oh my goodness! It's just, you know, it's unthinkable. It's unthinkable. How could a president of the United States say such a thing? How could he? Well, how about another president of the United States, another war hero, another man who was wounded in actual military action, who actually went to a war when his country asked, John Kennedy.
I have therefore chosen this time and place to discuss a topic on which ignorance too often abounds and the truth too rarely perceived, and that is the most important topic on earth, peace.
The most important topic on earth? What is this guy, some kind of liberal?
What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana enforced on the world by American weapons of war.
No, but that's the Rumsfeld vision, the Cheney vision.
Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children.
Yes.
Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time.
John Kennedy had some very specific and explicit thoughts about this and was very concerned about militarization during his time, as was Dwight Eisenhower. We seem to have lost our connection. Even the conservatives among us, who at one time were most worried about the militarization of things, have embraced this. And this is a real issue. How could the militarization of American society affect the future of democracy? Stay tuned. We'll get right into this. Truth and Compassion in Broadcasting. Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Highway crews in Iowa use native plants to fight roadside weeds. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Roadside managers in Iowa are thinking of spring already. They're planting seeds of native wildflowers and prairie grasses along state and county roads. It's all part of an effort to make the land along Iowa's roadways more friendly to the environment. Kirk Henderson oversees this project with the Native Roadside Vegetation Center at the University of Northern Iowa. He says state legislators created the program to protect Iowa's groundwater from pesticides. A lot of the chemicals came from farm use, but Henderson says road crews also sprayed herbicides in ditches along highways. They just wanted to kill weeds, but the chemicals ended up in the groundwater.
So they developed a program for reducing herbicide use in the roadsides, and it came about that the main focus of that program was using native prairie vegetation, the prairie grasses and the wildflowers of the original tallgrass prairie in roadsides.
Henderson says the use of native plants keeps the weeds from taking over.
And then it also has these other more colorful benefits, prairie restoration, restoring some of our lost natural heritage, creating habitat for songbirds and butterflies, and taking advantage of what is really a lot of land that runs throughout the state and doing something more interesting, treating it more like a resource.
Henderson says about half of Iowa's 99 counties have adopted the roadside program. He hopes more people who do highway maintenance will give this idea a try. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Grew up in a small town, by the mountains and the hills and the plains. Down in those smoky valleys, that the workers and the steel mills made. They're going to shut those places down, and I don't like the way it makes me feel. Been making steel for 100 years, and I think we got a rotten deal. American Steel Companies are the best in the land, making this world a better place, doing the best we can.
Putting the con in conservative, this is Tom Hartman speaking to you from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, broadcasting all across the nation. What did JFK really mean when he was talking about peace? I want to get back to this. This militarization here, we see, you know, immediately after the inauguration, for example, this administration posted military sharpshooters on the roof of the White House, routinely for the first time, making it into a third world military compound. George Bush is the first president since George Washington put down the Whiskey Rebellion, in which he actually led troops. George Bush is the first president to put on military garb while he is president, because every other president has understood that the whole point of having the military under the president is that the president is not a military, he is a civilian, that the military is not an extension of a militarized presidency, that we have a civilian government in the United States which controls our military, as opposed to, for example, Pakistan, controlled by the military dictator. So JFK's thoughts on this.
I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war.
And see, this is something George W. Bush knows well. By the way, this is from a speech he gave on the 10th of June, 1963. Just a few months before he was assassinated, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, after the invasion of Cuba, after all that stuff. This is the perspective of a seasoned president. And he says, peace is not, it doesn't, you know, you don't get what do they call George Bush now? President hoo-ha! You don't get the hoo-ha of being, you know, a macho guy. If you talk about peace as President of the United States instead of talking about war and evildoers and revenge. But it might leave the world in a different condition, as Kennedy says.
And frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears.
Pursuers,
but we have no more urgent task.
But we have no more urgent task than to pursue peace.
No government or social system is so evil that its people must be considered as lacking in virtue.
And this, you know, it's the objectification of the other. Oh, those people, you know, and now we have the situation in Afghanistan, for example, where the country is melting down. It's been turned back over to the Taliban is reasserting itself. The warlords, there's this little tiny bit of stability in Kabul, and even that is starting to fall apart. And the United States just let out of prison the former military commander of the Taliban, because we're positioning this guy to help take over the country. We're negotiating with and working with the Taliban again. I mean, it's just getting very strange. Well, why? There's no oil there, of course, and we've decided not to build the pipeline. And the Al-Qaeda is gone, so, forget about it. Is this how we protect our interests? Is this how we bring about genuine peace?
Our military forces are committed to peace and disciplined in self-restraint. Our diplomats are instructed to avoid unnecessary irritants and purely rhetorical hostility.
In other words, we don't call people axis of evil. Three different countries that had nothing to do with each other. Name calling is the poorest, the weakest form of foreign diplomacy. It plays well on faux news, but that's it.
For we can seek a relaxation of tensions without relaxing our guard. And for our part, we do not need to use threats to prove we are resolute.
As Teddy Roosevelt said, walk softly but carry a big stick.
Meanwhile, we seek to strengthen the United Nations to help solve its financial problems, to make it a more effective instrument for peace, to develop it into a genuine world security system, a system capable of resolving disputes on the basis of law, of ensuring the security of the large and the small, and of creating conditions under which arms can finally be abolished.
And this is an extraordinary point.
The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war.
Did you hear that? The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war. That has been the policy of this nation since before we started the war with England, which we said we didn't start. In other words, in 1776, on July 4, 1776, when the signers put their hand to the Declaration of Independence, they attached to it what is called a Bill of Particulars, a list of grievances. And you can read it. It's right there. It's part of the Declaration of Independence that said, over and over and over again in many different ways, Britain declared war on us first. We are responding. John Kennedy again.
The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war. We do not want a war. We do not now expect a war. This generation of Americans has already had enough, more than enough, of war and hate and oppression.
Of course, George W. was sitting out Vietnam in Alabama. So
we shall be prepared if others wish it. We shall be alert to try to stop it. But we shall also do our part to build a world of peace where the weak are safe and the strong are just. We are not helpless before that task or hopeless of its success.
Amen.
Confident and unafraid, we must labor on, not towards a strategy of annihilation, but towards a strategy of peace.
Here is a great war hero, a president who was unafraid to confront, straight up, head on, the other perceived greatest military power in the world. And he's talking like Dennis Kucinich. And how far have we gone? I mean, this absolute militarization of America. And now, what is it doing to us? What is it doing to our future? And we're really going to get into this in the next hour when we talk about what's going to happen if they denominate oil in euros. What is this doing to our future? The fact that we have the largest military buildup in history, as George W. Bush said in that opening clip that he had just put forward, the largest military budget since Ronald Reagan, which of course was the largest one in history. And in doing that, at the same time that we're doing these huge tax cuts, it's like, you know, guns and butter, you can have them both. Here, I just did this is George again saying.
Earlier this year, I proposed the largest increase in military spending since Ronald Reagan was the president.
Yeah, and you know, fine, is that something to be proud of? I mean, defending the country appropriately, yes, absolutely. But defining it in terms of dollars, even in the Pentagon, they would not agree with that logic. Here's what Dwight Eisenhower had to say about spending yourself into debt. This is in the same speech where he talked about the military-industrial complex, his farewell address, and just after he said, we must always remain vigilant about the impact of the military-industrial complex. He then added this comment, this such important comment.
During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller.
Excuse me, that's a clip you've already heard. This, here it is right here.
As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government, must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow.
Did you get that? We must avoid plundering the precious resources of tomorrow.
We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage.
We cannot mortgage the assets of our grandchildren. And that is literally, exactly, what the cons are doing right now. The conservative agenda at its core is about wiping out organized labor, reducing the cost of labor, increasing the profit of the largest corporations. I don't think they give a hoot about small and medium-sized companies, because those companies are not making huge campaign donations in Washington, D.C. They're not the ones that are lobbying Congress. They're not the ones who are showing up at Bush's fundraisers and passing out millions of dollars. No. It's the very largest of the corporations, the monopolies in America, that the Sherman Antitrust Act tried to stop. By the way, I just yesterday I just got in the mail a book published in 1892 that was written in 1888, which was a history of the Republican Party. And probably tomorrow, one of these days soon here, I found the Republican Party platform for 1872. And this was the party that had just spun off the Liberal Party. I mean, they had been in power for 11 years. They had fought the Civil War. They had freed the slaves. They had passed the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution to really and truly, in their mind anyway, at that time, in their way, free the slaves. And it was a party, it was, I don't want to get into the whole thing because I don't have it right in front of me, but what they said in that party platform, again, was so progressive and so positive. And the Republicans, the cons, have gone so far from their core values, from their fundamental values. As Eisenhower continues, we can't mortgage our grandchildren's future for today.
We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow.
And it will become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow if we just sit back. It is, you know, a generous portion of the entire national gross domestic product is just being dumped into our military. The military-industrial complex is changing our culture by creating the need to have an enemy to keep the economy going. We spend $400 billion a year on the military. That's more than the 25 next largest countries in the world combined. We're the world's largest supplier of military hardware. We have created a situation where the cons have set it up that if anybody speaks out in suggesting something like, oh, maybe there should be a Department of Peace, or maybe we shouldn't have this large a military budget. Maybe there is waste in there. Maybe there are unnecessary programs in there. Maybe we should have more allies and fewer weapons. The classic notion on which this nation has been built. That they are derided by the right-wingers and faux news as being anti-patriotic or anti-American or weak on defense. Nonsense! Our militarization during Vietnam was one of the most harmful things that happened to this nation. Mark my words, this militarization in Iraq, this militarization of America, is harming our country. Yes, hopefully a good result will come out of Iraq. Hopefully. And there is a very real possibility that some good result will come out of it. Was it worth the cost in dollars and American blood? Frankly, I don't believe so. The cons on TV, they love to say, well, do you think the world was better off when Saddam was still around? Yeah, I do. He was in a box. If we want to say, okay, it's the job of the United States to go around the world and take down bad dictators, he wouldn't be the one to start with. No, but he supported terrorism. The only support of terrorism that anybody has been able to document that Saddam was doing was he was sending $25,000 to the families of suicide bombers in Palestine and Israel. And there had to be a way to stop that beyond killing 10,000 civilians in Iraq. Three times as many as died in the World Trade Center. And wounding somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 of our own soldiers. Talk about what we're not seeing in the news. What we're not seeing are those soldiers who are wounded in the hospitals. The military will not allow us into those. So I'm going to just close this segment up here with Dwight Eisenhower's prayer for America at the end of his farewell address.
May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full.
Notice there's no rant about evildoers in here.
That all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility. That all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth.
And where are the statesmen when we need them? We are being led by a bunch of yahoos. And it's time to bring about a change. We can do that in November of 2004. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the No Spoon Feeding Zone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask
for a store near you.
Here is your bone. Don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you, don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
We are going to do Rumsfeld now. You know, I talk about doing acid 30 years ago. Rumsfeld must do it daily. Right before he goes out for a press conference, Rummy comes out all acid-headed up and, you know, just stoned on his ass, just completely freaked out.
Oh, hi. I noticed the doorknobs are all crawling around the ceiling. Hello. Ask me nothing. Get these spiders off of me. People are waving things at me. There's stuff jumping out of doors. Ew, Jesus. You know, the fire hose on the wall there, it just rose up like a snake. And you're asking me questions like, I don't know this stuff.
This is the Secretary of Defense, Truth Seeker. It's insane. Do you understand? These people are crazy.
So crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks in the RNC. This administration has even called for the militarization of the police forces. Bush administration has asked Congress to relax or repeal the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, which forbids the military from getting involved in civilian law enforcement, makes it illegal for soldiers to try to arrest or to try civilians. I mean, this is a law that goes back forever to prevent these very kinds of abuses. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Billy in California is on the line. And Billy, I know that you want to hear this so that you can respond to
it. With us or against us. You're either evil or you're good.
Okay, which are you, Billy?
I'm either evil or good. Well, I'll tell you something.
Oh, my God, you must be a liberal.
George Bush will consider me evil and not good. And that's what I wanted to talk about.
Right.
The, you know, one thing let me just comment real quick on the Roosevelt tapes.
Yeah.
And that is, you should do just what you did. Whenever you play Roosevelt.
Oh, this was Eisenhower.
Whenever you play a real president, play a piece of George Bush up against it so we see how really downhill we've gone.
Yeah, I mean, I played Eisenhower and Kennedy, who were both considered conservatives, and Eisenhower, of course, was a conservative Republican. And anyway, as you were saying,
neither one of them were cruel, and I want to talk about cruelty.
Yeah, we've only got about a minute and a half here, so
okay, I'll submit.
Let's get into it.
I want to submit that the reason that there's been a war in the past 40 years is because particularly Republicans want it that way. The reason that there's people who would deny sick people marijuana to smoke, it's not so much a political idea as it is psychological. I think there's a touch of cruelty. Now, it's up to me to
In the conservative mindset, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. So now the question is this. Rush Limbaugh, should he go to jail or not? Well, one of the soft liberals, and I consider you one of the softer liberals. I'm a nasty liberal, and you're a soft liberal, which means you know what that means. Anyway, he was saying that, gee, he thought, you know, if we don't think people should go to jail, then Rush shouldn't go to jail. And I disagree completely with that, because the only thing I know for sure is we've thrown hundreds of thousands of people in jail, and the mean-spirited, and that's my point, they're mean-spirited people don't care
at all
about that.
I'm not opposed to Rush going to jail. What I'm saying is if he doesn't go to jail, then hopefully that will lead the revolution of changing our drug laws. And maybe if he does go to jail, it will. I mean, look at what they just did to Tommy Cheech, or Chong, whichever it was. Chong, I guess. Anyhow, thank you, Billy. I appreciate the call, as always. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, discussing solutions and not false promises.
This ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The person responsible for analyzing the Iraqi weapons threat for Colin Powell says the Secretary of State misinformed Americans during his speech at the UN last February. Greg Thielman tells the CBS program 60 Minutes 2 that at the time of Powell's speech, Iraq didn't pose an imminent threat to anyone, not even its own neighbors. Thielman said the decision to go to war was made first, and then the intelligence was interpreted to fit that conclusion, saying senior administration officials used faith-based intelligence. Another UN inspector, Steve Allenson, told of a dozen UN inspectors watching Powell's speech and laughing at various times because the information he was presenting, quote, had no meaning. Nagging criticism on the economy and Iraq policy are taking their toll on President Bush's political standing, according to a new ABC News Washington Post poll. The poll says that nearly 6 in 10 Americans call U.S. casualties in Iraq unacceptable, more than double its level at last April's fall of Baghdad, and most continue to disapprove on his handling of the economy. More than 8 in 10 continue to see the alleged White House leak of CIA operatives' identity as a serious matter, and the number who think the administration is fully cooperating in the investigation is down to 39%. At least half of House Democrats will vote against President Bush's $87 billion spending request for Iraq and Afghanistan this week, and others plan to support it under protest. The bill is expected to pass both houses with Republican support, but its price tag has dampened enthusiasm on both sides of the aisle. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is planning to cut at least 100 of the nation's 425 military bases in 2005, shutting down more military bases than in the four previous rounds of closures combined. Rumsfeld will submit to the Congressional Base Closure and Realignment Commission a plan to shutter as many as one-third of Army bases, one-quarter of Air Force bases, and a smaller percentage of Marine Corps and Navy bases. Such a proposal would guarantee a political firestorm on Capitol Hill. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had. And I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK. 1-800-NAT-PARK. There's just too much to lose.
A Russian man's attempt to get a paint stain out of his pants destroyed his Moscow apartment. The man added a liter of gasoline to his washing machine, but the ensuing explosion wrecked his kitchen and demolished two internal walls. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Nothing complements a ball game like a bag of roasted peanuts. I like to eat them 3-4 at a time, and I'm talking the jumbo ones, lightly salted and fresh from the shell.
Ah, peanuts, baseball, and the crack of my tooth!
Don't let toothaches interfere with your life. When you can't get to the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol. It contains the same strong pain relief medicine your dentist uses, so it works faster than you can say, ah. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone. Use as directed.
You've probably never heard of Mr. Wally Odell or of his corporation, Diebold, Inc. But Odell and his firm are reaching out and touching you and millions of your fellow Americans in a most fundamental way. Diebold has become one of America's largest sellers of touchscreen computer voting equipment. Most states have converted from real ballot boxes to these virtual systems provided by outfits like Diebold. Instead of physically marking your ballots, now you touch the screen to make your choices and, supposedly, the touchscreen technology magically transfers your vote into cyberspace. But what about real space? Growing numbers of Americans are alarmed by evidence that these computerized systems can be easily manipulated to steal our votes. Various organizations of computer professionals have called for stringent new reforms to protect our precious right of voting from the thieves who would loot our votes from these untraceable cyber boxes. Public concern has been heightened by revelations that the biggest providers of digital voting technology are strong partisans and major backers of the Republican Party. At the top of this list is Odell. He's had security concerns raised about his voting computers, even as he has been soliciting big donations for the election of George W. In August, Wally jetted down to Bush's ranchette in Crawford, Texas, for a presidential powwow with GOP fundraisers who have committed to raising big bucks for Bush's campaign. The very next week, Odell sent out letters asking for $10,000 donations for the Republican Party. And only one day later, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio blessed Wally's company with official authorization to provide electronic voting machines in Ohio. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn how you can help to stop electronic voting fraud, go to www.verifiedvoting.org.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, as you know. I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the Afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the radio support group of By and For. We, the people. We, the people, not they, the multinational corporations. Yes, I fully acknowledge the value of business in America. I've started a bunch of them myself. I've done well with them. I honor business and free enterprise in the United States. However, it has run amok at a certain level. At what Teddy Roosevelt gave a marvelous speech. I don't have it in front of me. It's in my book on equal protection, where he talks about the small business people who built America and the medium-sized businesses that are the anchors and pillars of many communities. And then he says, and now on to a different topic, the big businesses. And these are the corporations that are seeking to destroy labor in the United States, that are seeking to put their hand around the throat of government and squeeze it so tight. As Grover Norquist said, we don't want to destroy American government, e.g. democracy. We simply want to drag it into the bathroom and shrink it down so small that we can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. Yes, this is the conservative agenda. Destroy democracy and replace it with feudalism, a new kind of feudalism that at one time was called aristocracy and is now called corporatism, where the corporations own the commons. The corporations make the decisions. The corporations make the rules. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, challenging those notions. Broadcasting live coast to coast, also on radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, Sirius Satellite Radio System, and on radio stations from sea to shining sea. Kodak in Hartford, Connecticut has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, had some thoughts on our newscast that just finished. Kodak, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Always great to have you call in.
Why, thank you. How are you doing today?
Good. Are you out driving your truck there?
Yes, I am, and I have to agree with you. It is absolutely gorgeous up here this time of year.
Yeah. New England is extraordinary in the autumn.
It is. Yes, over the news break there, the National Enquirer has broken another story. The bug that was put in the mayor's office was only there for a period of 2 weeks. So I guess in order for us to get the true, unfiltered news, we're going to have to start buying the National Enquirer. It's evident that they are the only ones that have any investigating reporters there.
The left, yeah, they're the only ones that have any vest. You know, it's interesting. Last night, for the first time, I think, in my life, and I'm not exaggerating, I have no recollection of ever having done this before. Louise was at the supermarket, and she picked up the National Enquirer because it had Rush Limbaugh on the cover and brought it home. And for the first time in my life, I read the National Enquirer. And I was amazed. Number one, it seemed like basically it's just a publication for people who are into celebrities. You know, what are the stars up to now? And number two, their story on Rush Limbaugh was just a jaw-dropper. I mean, this guy, 30,000 pills. This guy had quantities of drugs that would qualify him under both state and federal laws as not just a user, but as a dealer. I mean, he could be...
Right. And we, the National Enquirer, inquiring minds want to know who else was he supplying. Because if he did all those drugs, he would be dead.
Yeah, and they also asked the question. There were times apparently when his housekeeper Wilma, what's her name, wasn't supplying them to him, and he was getting them via Federal Express in big boxes, and nobody knows from whom. And there's that. And then the two times that he did detox, if you read the tapes. I mean, I was there during the 60s, and I don't want to get into a lot of personal stuff here, and I certainly knew people who were really into Syria. I mean, you know, people who were like going through detox, and there were junkies that I knew who would dry out just because what happens with an addictive drug is if you use it long enough, you stop getting high from it.
and you've got to go through a day or two and of not having any, and then all of a sudden it starts getting you high again. And what Rush did was twice, he did these 24-hour detoxes where you go in and they anesthetize you. They give you a drug that essentially knocks you out for 24 hours so you don't experience the physical and psychological withdrawal. And then you get out, and now for the next month or so, you can get high again on the stuff. And he's talking to his housekeeper about this, you know, about how he's pumping up higher and higher dosage before the detox, and so you know, this is not about back pain. I'm sorry, if the National Enquirer is accurate as you suggest at Kodak.
Yeah, I didn't mean to get off the subject, and I do on the weekends. I do a lot of work in my hometown in that area of helping people get back on track that are suffering from of substance abuse, treatment is really the only cure. Naturally, you can't save everyone, but those ones that have a real desire to stop abusing drugs make tremendous turnaround in their lives.
Yeah, you know, I remember years ago, I actually wrote about this in one of my books on ADD, because a lot of people with attention deficit disorder, adults, are more a little more prone to substance abuse. And it seems that when you look at the most addictive drugs, nicotine being the most addictive drug that there is in the world to human beings, alcohol being among the second tier, alcohol, cocaine, and crack cocaine and heroin. Alcohol takes longer to get addicted, but the addiction withdrawal can actually be fatal. It's the only drug that people can actually die from while going through withdrawal from a lack of. And when you look at how people stop, what you find is that about half of the people who quit using alcohol, tobacco, heroin, and crack cocaine, about half of them simply walk away from it. They just do it on their own, even though they're fully addicted. The other half really and truly need help. And that, of course, has caused this big split among the AA folks and whatnot about, you know, treatment and non-treatment. But I agree with you. We need to have, for those half who can't walk away. I mean, I remember when I quit using tobacco. It was when Louise became pregnant with our first child, which was 31 years ago, and we both stopped smoking. And I had a pack of cigarettes. And I'd been smoking for about 6 years at the time. And I put that pack of cigarettes on top of the refrigerator, and I just looked at it and I said, "I'm stronger than you are." And every day, you know, and I would walk up to it, and I would, you know, but I didn't have another cigarette. And it was an extremely difficult thing. I mean, it took half a year to really go through the complete withdrawal from that drug, but. You know, it can be done, but I think that for those people who really need the help in doing it, you know, not everybody's wired the way I am, I guess. And I'm not saying that I'm a saint. I'm just saying there's like half of us can do that. The other half who can't, we really need to have facilities available for people who earn less than the $280 million a year that Rush does. And I congratulate you, Kodak, for your work and working with those folks. I think that's marvelous. You still there? Final thought? Oh, we lost Kodak. Okay. Truck must have moved on down the road. Thank you for calling and sharing that with us. Let's get now to this thing about the oil. This is something, yeah, it was a great tangent. It really was. Kodak, I appreciate the call, and I had been meaning to talk about that. I got an email. You're probably seeing it. It's probably floating all over the Internet. How it was in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or Post-Tribune or whatever the newspaper is there in St. Louis, an op-ed piece about how Rush would spin it if Bill Clinton had admitted that he was a pill addict or a narcotics addict. But it's interesting. I recommend it to you. Take a look at it. We're not going to get too much deeper into that in this show. I think we've done enough with it. But here's the question. In my mind, that I want to raise in this hour, and that I think this is really and truly one of the serious issues that we are facing right now. I mean, one of the really dangerous issues that we're facing. And that is, will the Bush Doctrine of preemptive belligerence, of unilateralism, of saying to the world that they can take a leap, of calling the United Nations irrelevant, of referring to our allies in Europe, our allies of 200 years in Europe, as old Europe, of dissing our friends, of identifying entire nations as evil, using religious language in the realm of international politics, playing to the choir at home, to the right wing, the cons and the neocons and the gullible, really. I mean, it's the gullible who are sucking this stuff up. Most of these people aren't even really what you would call conservative. They don't understand what conservative means, because these folks are not conservatives, these in the traditional sense. So anyhow, the question, will the Bush doctrine of belligerence around the world and of preemption cause Russia and Germany in particular, although I think that there's a larger alliance forming, but Russia is the big one, to throw us into another Great Depression, an economic disaster, in order to reduce our power? See, what the Bush Doctrine of belligerence has brought about is two very significant and severe consequences. First of all, among those people who consider, who Bush says, you know, they're our enemies, it has caused them to ramp up the level with which they are arming themselves. So now we have Iran and North Korea, which were both in the box. Neither of them were aggressively developing their weapons programs, the nuclear weapons potential that they had. They were both held static as a result of negotiations and deals that were cut during the Clinton administration and during the Bush administration before that. And both of these nations now, it appears, are making nuclear weapons. And other nations around the world are arming themselves to be, and even China. You know, they just put a man into outer space yesterday. Their military is growing so fast. So we've got the quote, enemy nations of the world becoming super hyper-militarized, increasing the probability of world conflict. And we have our allies talking about taking an action, an economic action, that will bring us to our knees because they think we are too strong now because we can't be trusted. To be, you know, it's like, you know, remember in elementary school there was that part on the report card where it said plays good with friends or cooperates well with others? George Bush didn't get that, you know, checked off. And this has caused a real serious problem for us. The oil standard, the dollar right now is the currency that oil around the world is denominated in. And there was a time when we based the value of our currency on gold, from the Great Depression up until August 15th, 1971. Since then, it's basically been based on oil. I want to explain how that works and what the Russians may have in mind for us and what kind of outcome it can produce. And I'm going to take Mike's call in Washington, D.C. He's got a comment about our addiction to oil after this break. But will the Bush doctrine of belligerence cause Russia and Germany to throw us into a depression to reduce our power? Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we will be right back.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Is downing Metamucil for regularity getting you down?
It's too hard to take.
But you must.
It's thick and icky, gloppy and gritty. I cannot.
Next time, try FiberCon. It's a better way to stay regular because just two caplets and a refreshing glass of water is all you need to get the same results as Metamucil powder.
FiberCon! Oh, FiberCon! Your refreshing easier to take.
Use only as directed.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Bodad, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. Anacor Hotel.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing.
You've probably never heard of Mr. Wally Odell or of his corporation, Diebold, Inc. But Odell and his firm are reaching out and touching you and millions of your fellow Americans in a most fundamental way. Diebold has become one of America's largest sellers of touchscreen computer voting equipment. Most states have converted from real ballot boxes to these virtual systems provided by outfits like Diebold. Instead of physically marking your ballots, now you touch the screen to make your choices and, supposedly, the touchscreen technology magically transfers your vote into cyberspace. But what about real space? Growing numbers of Americans are alarmed by evidence that these computerized systems can be easily manipulated to steal our votes. Various organizations of computer professionals have called for stringent new reforms to protect our precious right of voting from the thieves who would loot our votes from these untraceable cyber boxes. Public concern has been heightened by revelations that the biggest providers of digital voting technology are strong partisans and major backers of the Republican Party. At the top of this list is Odell. He's had security concerns raised about his voting computers, even as he has been soliciting big donations for the election of George W. In August, Wally jetted down to Bush's ranchette in Crawford, Texas, for a presidential powwow with GOP fundraisers who have committed to raising big bucks for Bush's campaign. The very next week, Odell sent out letters asking for $10,000 donations for the Republican Party. And only one day later, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio blessed Wally's company with official authorization to provide electronic voting machines in Ohio. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn how you can help to stop electronic voting fraud, go to www.verifiedvoting.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Will the Bush doctrine of belligerence, of preemption, of unilateralism, of dissing our allies, of throwing rhetoric rather than real diplomacy against our enemies, cause Russia and Germany to throw us into a depression in order to reduce our power, to take us down a notch? It looks to me like they're setting this thing up so that if Bush is reelected in 2004, or is elected, let's say, he wasn't elected the first time, is elected in 2004, that they can just pull the switch. And I'm going to give you all the details on this in just a minute. First, we have Mike in Washington, D.C., has called 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on over the break, by the way.
You
got to speak up a little, Mike. I can hardly hear you.
Sorry. What I wanted to call about is sort of a bridge between Kodak's call about Russia's problem, his addiction, your comments, and the problem with our addiction to oil.
Right.
First of all, at one point I was a traumatic alcoholic, and that's another thing. We have a very bad habit in this country of trying to break everything down into black and white, on or off.
Polar categories.
Exactly.
This, polar, that. Heads or tails.
We can't seem to understand that there are alcoholics who are chemical alcoholics. They are chemically dependent on alcohol or whatever drug it is they're addicted to. That's one problem. Alcoholics can become alcoholics as a response to a very stressful situation. Once you remove the stressors, they're no longer alcoholics.
Yeah, self-medication.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
But we can't seem to, you know, it's either you're completely abstinent or you're a complete, ruined, absolutely sodden drunk. There is nothing in between.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know from our personal experiences, that is a lie.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we are actual chemical, physical addicts of petroleum.
In many ways, you know, our food supply, there's some remarkable stuff about this. I write about this in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and Leonardo mentions it in his new web movie, that even our food supply now is produced by oil. I mean, you know, the tractors, fertilizers are made from oil, pesticides are made from oil. Without oil, not only would we not have transportation, which is what most people think of, not only would we not have houses that are warm, not only would we not have plastics, but we wouldn't have food either.
Right. And, well, again, that's because we...
At least given the way things are set up right now.
Correct.
Which is the point you're about to make there.
And that's because we've gone away from the idea of the family farm, which, thank God, you still have to some degree, at least up in New England.
Yeah.
Where people actually farm the way they have for thousands of years. And surprisingly enough, that works.
Yeah.
The time-tested method still works.
Yep.
Yeah.
So your point is then that Mike, that we have an addiction to oil here in the United States, and that therefore we are behaving like addicts. That is, we are in denial. We're modifying our lifestyle and reconstructing the way that we do things in order to maintain access to our addictive substance. We're behaving in ways that are contrary to our own best interests in order to maintain the addiction, rather than looking for alternatives to the addiction. Is that
correct?
Your point?
It's like, I mean, you know, that's why we went to Iraq. That's why we have to have an iron grip on all productive sources of oil. It's just like an addict, making sure that he can get his stuff.
Yeah.
And we're behaving just as irrationally. You know, we're attacking everyone. We're belligerent. You know.
Yep. Yep, that's absolutely right. And now, what are the consequences? This, Mike, and thank you for your call. What now become the consequences of this? How is this going to play out? Almost 70% of the world's currency reserves are in U.S. dollars. What does that mean for us? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The use of hydrogen for fuel might have some environmental surprises. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Fuel cells that run on hydrogen might be a great source of energy. The only exhaust from these fuel cells would be water, and their use in cars could make smog a thing of the past. Tracy Tromp wanted to know what might happen if every car in the U.S. used hydrogen for fuel. Tromp is a physicist at the California Institute of Technology, and she worked with a team of researchers to study the production, storage, and transportation of hydrogen. They also looked at the impact of gas leaks along the way. Tromp says gas leaks could potentially cause problems with the Earth's protective ozone layer.
So you have to somehow produce the hydrogen, you have to transport it, you have to somehow put it in your automobile, and all along that way hydrogen can leak into the atmosphere. Hydrogen leaking into the atmosphere could cause upper atmospheric cooling, and it could cause an increase in ozone destruction.
Tromp says the hydrogen could increase water vapor in the stratosphere, and that would disrupt natural processes that create ozone molecules. the ozone layer is recovering from damage done by synthetic chemicals known as chlorofluorocarbons. These chemicals have been banned internationally. Trump says that might make the issue of hydrogen leaks less important in the future.
50 years down the line from now, hopefully most of the chlorofluorocarbons have been removed from the stratosphere, and so the issue of an ozone hole opening up or that hydrogen would cause the ozone hole to hang around longer are diminished.
Trump says we need to know more about how hydrogen behaves in the environment to make smart choices about the use of hydrogen for energy. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad. Now we're all in danger. Come around, up to no good. Broke the old treaties 'cause he could. Struts all around like a hood. Got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
Welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone. This is Tom Hartman on Talk Radio for the rest of us. A caller called into the into Sharon, our board operator, our engineer there in Detroit, and said, please give out my email address. My website is www.tomhartman.com or liberaltalkradio.com will also get you there, or progressivetalkradio.com will get you there, but they all point to tomhartman.com. And on that site, you will find my email address, and you'll also find a link to our message boards. You'll also find a link to our chat room, our live chat room, which is full of folks right now having a lively conversation. The chat room and the message board are separate. The chat room is just on during the 3 hours that we're doing the program. The message board is up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there's well over 20,000 messages on there. You can post them, and I do read the message board. And so probably the best way, if there's something you want to say to me that's not entirely personal, is to post it on the message board. But my email address is there, too. I just let you know that I get so much spam, and because my email address is out there, it's been published in all these Common Dreams articles that I've done and whatnot. I get spam. I get, you know, hate mail from people from right-wing wackos and whatnot. So I've got a really tight spam filter on it, and an awful lot of stuff just doesn't get through to me unless it's from somebody I'm familiar with. So the best way to communicate with me is by posting something on the message board. Very straightforward. Anyhow, thank you, and thank you for the call and for the inquiry. But it is it's not at all difficult to reach me. 1973. Let's go back actually a little bit before that. August 15th, 1971. Richard Nixon is president, and the value of the United States currency, the dollar, up until that point has been pegged to gold. And Nixon changed the law so that the value of our dollar was no longer based on gold. And so then the question became, well, what is it based on? And even today, the broad theory is that it's based on the faith and, you know, faith and confidence of the United States government, that we're a strong economy, that we're a country that doesn't run itself into debt or behave stupidly, you know, last 2.5 years excepted, and that, therefore, our currency has value that reflects the power and stability of our economy. But there's a larger reality. There's a much larger reality. And that is that by 1971, by initially back in the 1950s, installing the Shah in Iraq, by the 70s, we were just on the verge of putting Saddam Hussein into power in Iraq, we had put the Saudi royal family into power in Saudi Arabia. We had basically succeeded in sewing up, in one way or another, political, by ownership, by politics, whatever, control over much of the world's oil. And therefore, the price of oil around the world was denominated in dollars. So the dollar came to have a value internationally and domestically that was a reflection not only of the power of the American economy, but of the world supply of oil as well. How much oil there was, how it was used, how it was being used, how it was needed, all those kinds of things. And so we went essentially from a gold standard to an oil standard, even though nobody talks about that, you know, kind of out loud like that. And there's some real significant consequences to this, particularly if Putin, that man that Bush says, "I looked into his eyes and saw his soul. We had just come from a very long conversation when we talked about family matters and we talked about our own lives. I found in Vladimir a very genuine person, somebody with whom I could place my trust." Well, it turns out that Vladimir may be about to put a stake into the heart of the economy of the United States. I'll give you some details on that right after this call. We've got Tim, a trucker in Texas, has called 1-800-TALK-YES. Tim, thanks for calling the program. What's up?
Well, I want to make three quick statements if I can. Number one, I'll touch on Rush Limbaugh, and that he should not go to jail for being an addict. But if he should go to jail or at least be tried for procuring. In other words, it's against the law in Florida to buy.
Yeah.
Nothing that says about being an addict, but he bought. There's also the charge that maybe he obstructed justice. Now, these are the charges that he should legally face.
Yeah, okay. So that's your first point.
Getting back to Georgie boy.
Yep.
I'd like to know which Alabama Air National Guard unit he supposedly was attached to, because during the primaries, when he was supposed to be elected, but he never was, he came over once to Alabama, and he spoke to the VFW or the American Legion, and he bragged how he was coming home because he had been attached to the Alabama Air National Guard. Nobody in any Air National Guard unit could find him.
Right.
We'd love to know which unit he was attached to.
Yeah, I'm going through a stack of papers I've got here. I know I've got it in here somewhere. I've got the whole history of the thing, and it's probably this is a digression. So we'll get to that. I did have the here it is right here.
Number three, if I can make one final point.
Sure.
Okay. When it comes to oil, now if my theory is right.
Hang on just a second. He was attached to the Air National Guard unit in Montgomery, Alabama. However, the commander, General William Turnipseed, claimed in an interview before his death that Bush never reported for duty. And his administrative officer at the time, Kenneth K. Lott, says that he had no memory of Bush ever reporting. So
he never reported for duty. He never signed in any meetings. He never signed
out
on an aircraft, either as a crew member or a pilot.
There you go.
It's of makeup.
Yep.
But anyway,
which is nothing new from these guys.
Regarding oil. Now,
yes.
My theory is correct about that we entered Iraq to control the oil. What we're going to see to get him elected this time, you're going to see suddenly a stabilization in the price of oil and at the pump.
That's right. In fact, this was what Rupert Murdoch said.
Pardon?
Rupert Murdoch, just before we invaded Iraq, he gave an interview to, I think it was The Times, a newspaper that he owns in London. And Rupert Murdoch said that if George Bush was able to invade Iraq and seize the oil, and I'm paraphrasing, this isn't a verbatim quote, he said, but basically that if George Bush was able to invade Iraq and seize the oil supplies of Iraq and thereby bring $20 a barrel oil to the United States, that would do more to stimulate the American economy and implicitly, therefore, get Bush reelected than any amount of tax cuts.
Right, but once he's elected, then the price will go back up again.
Oh, you bet. You bet.
So
I agree with you.
Even if they have to do it artificially, they will bring the price of oil in the United States down the closer we get to election time.
I agree. Tim, good points. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. I think it's important for us to remember that when George Bush declared a hot war, essentially, on Iraq, I have a hard time calling it a war. When you've got a country, you've completely decimated their air force over the course of 12 years. You've killed over 150,000 of their soldiers. You've starved them for a decade. You have literally attacked them daily, taken out all of their radar systems, all of their self-defense systems, and then you declare war on them. It's hard to call it a war. It's sort of like the bully, beating somebody up and breaking his legs and knocking him to the ground and knocking him nearly unconscious and then saying, okay, now stand up and have a fair fight. It's not. But anyhow, when Bush declared whatever that was, his bully action over there in Iraq, and he said, and now I'd like to speak to the Iraqi people. And he could have said to them, there's American GIs going over there, and they're young men just like your young men and young men and women in the military, and we value our soldiers just as you value yours, and we'll do our best to minimize civilian casualties and even military casualties. In fact, you should just lay down your arms and give up, because we're the biggest army in the world. And if you'll do that, we would appreciate that, and also we would appreciate it if you did not shoot at our soldiers, because they're going into harm's way to help and defend you. If he had said something to that effect, it would have made sense. I mean, that's what I was expecting. He's got decent speech writers. I don't think that he could think this up, but he's got decent speech writers. I was expecting something like that. But instead, George Bush turns to the camera and says, I'd like to speak to the Iraqi people, and then says, this is the only thing that he asked them to do. This is it. He said,
your fate will depend on your actions.
And what are those actions?
Do not destroy oil wells.
There you go. He said, do not destroy the oil wells. And so, Tim, I agree with you. This was a war about oil. Absolutely. Now, let's get down to the bottom line here, the brass tacks of this, as they say. OPEC is Algeria, Indonesia, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Libya, Qatar, Nigeria, the United Arab Emirates, Venezuela, and Saudi Arabia. This group was organized in 1960, and we just kind of ignored them because oil was denominated in dollars, and we had political ties with all these groups and all these countries, and we figured we're on the top of the pile. And in 1973, we were having about a 6% annual inflation, 8.5% annual inflation here in the United States. The inflation was being wrung out of the economy as a consequence of our going into debt during the Vietnam War. The ghosts of Vietnam were coming home to haunt us. And we had 8.5% inflation, and Nixon was trying to do something about this. He had put price controls on things, like oil, for example. He put price control on oil. And he had this, and now America, keep in mind, in 1950, America was 100% self-sufficient on oil. In 1950, when Dwight Eisenhower was president, did he become president in 52? Must have been. Anyhow, in 1950, when Harry Truman was president, we had absolute 100% of the oil that we used, we pumped ourselves, or we had that ability. We were self-sufficient. By 1973, March of 73, Nixon was president, 35% of our oil was being imported. Our national petroleum reserve had been pumped dry. And we had no idea what was going to happen. I mean, we were completely unprepared, as I suspect we are right now again. And here's a great little summary of what happened. This is from buyandhold.com, which is a website about currencies and things. But anyhow, they say, on October 6th, 1973, the Jewish holy day of Yom Kippur, Egyptian forces attacked Israel from across the Suez Canal, while at the same time Syrian troops were flooding the Golan Heights in a surprise offensive. And they point out that Israel counterattacked, pushed into Syrian territory. With help from the United States, they reversed the Arab gains, and a ceasefire was concluded in November. But on October 17th, in the middle of this war, right, it was declared on October 6th that it was resolved a few weeks later. But on October 17th, while the war was still going on, OPEC struck back against the West by imposing an oil embargo on the United States and increasing the price of oil to all of our Western European allies by 70%. Overnight, the price of a barrel of oil to those nations went from $3 to $5.11. It would be the equivalent of today's oil going to $40 a barrel or more, $45 a barrel. In January of 1974, they raised it further to $11.65. Almost four times as high. It would be the equivalent of today's oil being $80 a barrel. The U.S. and the Netherlands in particular were singled out for their support of Israel in the war. Nixon freaked out. What could he do? He encouraged voluntary rationing. He asked people to turn down their thermostats. I remember this well. We were living in Detroit, Louise and I, at the time. Our youngest child had just been born. And it was spooky living in a city like Detroit because we lived out in an area called Westland, which is out near Inkster and out near the airport, in the direction of the airport, and to the west of the city. And it was kind of the suburbs, but, you know, it was attached to the city. And it was like the supermarkets went empty. I mean, it was like there was that, and then there was this trucker strike that the Teamsters had. My recollection may be wrong on that, and I don't have the documentation on that, but there was some kind of strike that happened as a result of his oil price controls. And the supermarket, you just couldn't find food for a couple of days there. And Nixon was asking people to trim their work hours. Gas stations couldn't pump more than 10 gallons of gas per customer. You had lines to gas stations going two and three blocks around the street. People were getting shot in line. I mean, fights were breaking out while people were waiting in line to get gas, and people were getting so upset they were killing each other. This happened in the United States in 1973, in November of 1973. And the price of gas quadrupled. It went up fourfold. Okay. So now we have the situation. And then you know, it got over and we made up with the Arabs and kind of things went back to okay. So now we've got this, the dollar has become the world's currency because it's so stable. And now Putin is saying, maybe. See, Vladimir Putin and Gerhard Schroeder agreed to this as a check on U.S. power. There was this conference where they got together, these two guys, and they said, this was in Yekaterinburg in the Urals. Putin says, we would not rule out that it is possible, that is, that they would start pricing their oil. Now, keep in mind, oil and gas. Russia is the largest natural gas reserves in the world and is number two in the world in oil after Saudi Arabia. He said, we would not rule out that it is possible to price their oil in euros. This would be very interesting for our European partners. But this does not depend solely on us, he said. We do not want to hurt prices on the markets. Now, what's happening is we're creating this huge balance of payments deficits. We're buying all kinds of stuff from other countries, particularly the cheap labor countries, where we're exporting our jobs to, and this insane trade policies of this administration. And we're developing this huge trade deficit. What that means is that we're sending dollars overseas. They're sending stuff here. The only reason they're willing to take our dollars is because they can buy oil with them. And it's not the only reason, but it's one of the main reasons. It's the currency of exchange for the planet. And if Putin, who's got the second largest reserves on the earth in oil, decides, and the largest in natural gas, decides to say, okay, we're going to sell our stuff in euros, and it's looking like he's going to do it. Starting last year, the Russian Central Bank began amassing euros. And it set off a firestorm of euro deposits in Russian banks. Russian citizens are just stampeding to the euro and away from the dollar. And this would create a complete realignment of the world. If Russia, France, and Germany went along with this thing, not only would it wipe us out economically, but they would, you know, we're talking about a radical realignment. And then if the Arabs got into the act and OPEC got into this thing, it could be a real mess. And all as a result of this doctrine of belligerence on the part of George Bush. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams. It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
Well, the ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on.
Tom Hartman Show.
Ta-da! We have caught somebody doing something right. Yes, indeed, folks. Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich has introduced a bill into the United States Congress called the Benjamin Franklin True Patriot Act. And Dennis Kucinich's law would repeal sections of the USA Patriot Act that authorize sneak and peek searches, warrantless library, medical, and financial record services, and the detention and deportation of non-citizens without meaningful judicial review. Beyond the Patriot Act, the bill also cements the fundamental right of attorney-client privilege and restores transparency in the Department of Justice and Homeland Security by revoking FOIA, Freedom of Information Act secrecy orders, along with other important provisions. As Dennis Kucinich said, and I quote, after September 11th, Americans did not authorize the deterioration of the first, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 14th Amendments.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth and common sense in broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. In our chat room, Adrian dropped in. Interesting, he runs a website called freedomhaters.com. And then just kind of casually mentioned that he's in Melbourne, Australia, listening to our program on a 14-hour time delay. That is, listening to the program live right now, but 14 hours. Welcome. It is so cool. We're on radio stations all across the nation, and We have listeners all around the planet. I get email from people who listen to the program from Norway, from the United Kingdom, from France. I've had people send me emails from Hong Kong, Taiwan. In Togo, we had somebody in Togo, West Africa, send us an email that they were listening to the program. So it's just incredible, just incredible. Anyhow, what are the consequences if oil is priced in euros, as they say, or euros? The oil importing nations will no longer need dollar reserves to buy oil. They don't need dollars anymore. So if you don't need dollars anymore, then because we're trying to sell dollars. I mean, we're selling dollars as fast as we can. Or, you know, trying to give them away in order to get stuff. And people are going to say, hey, we don't need your dollars anymore. So demand for the dollar will fall. So central banks will move their reserves to safer currencies like the euro. And it'll become increasingly difficult for the United States to pay its debts or for our citizens to have any buying power. The U.S. economy, followed by the United States' power, would slip away. We would have a domestic hyperinflationary depression. And then the Japanese economy, which is tied to the U.S. economy, would follow very quickly. And the reason for this has to do with Japanese banking laws. The banks would be in trouble because Americans aren't buying Japanese goods, right? So, because their economy depends on our buying Japanese stuff. And if we can't buy it, then they go down the tubes. They, of course, wouldn't be the only one around the world, but they're such a large economy. The Japanese government is legally obligated to bail out its banks. Where would the government of Japan get the money to bail out its banks? They'd sell the U.S. Treasury notes. The Japanese government right now owns 15% of the United States federal debt. 15% of all Treasury securities issued by the United States. All of that money that we borrow to give those, quote, tax breaks, end quote, to the rich in the United States. 15% of that money that we borrowed in order to hand those trillions of dollars to the top 1% of Americans, we borrowed from Japan. And they would have to say, sorry, we don't want these securities anymore. They dump them on the world market, and we would really be in a world of pain. We can change this. We need to change our policies immediately and go to renewable resources and change our Middle Eastern policies. We can do it in November of 2004. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Nagging criticism on the economy and Iraq policy are taking their toll on President Bush's political standing, according to a new ABC News Washington Post poll. The poll says that nearly 6 in 10 Americans call U.S. casualties in Iraq unacceptable, more than double its level at last April's fall of Baghdad, and most continue to disapprove on his handling of the economy. More than 8 in 10 continue to see the alleged White House leak of CIA operatives' identity as a serious matter, and the number who think the administration is fully cooperating in the investigation is down to 39%. The person responsible for analyzing the Iraqi weapons threat for Colin Powell says the Secretary of State misinformed Americans during his speech at the UN last February. Greg Thielman tells the CBS program 60 Minutes 2 that at the time of Powell's speech, Iraq didn't pose an imminent threat to anyone, not even its own neighbors. Thielman said the decision to go to war was made first, and then the intelligence was interpreted to fit that conclusion, saying senior administration officials used faith-based intelligence. Another UN inspector, Steve Allenson, told of a dozen UN inspectors watching Powell's speech and laughing at various times because the information he was presenting, quote, had no meaning. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is planning to cut at least 100 of the nation's 425 military bases in 2005, shutting down more military bases than in the four previous rounds of closures combined. Rumsfeld will submit to the Congressional Base Closure and Realignment Commission a plan to shutter as many as one-third of Army bases, one-quarter of Air Force bases, and a smaller percentage of Marine Corps and Navy bases. Such a proposal would guarantee a political firestorm on Capitol Hill. At least half of House Democrats will vote against President Bush's $87 billion spending request for Iraq and Afghanistan this week, and others plan to support it under protest. The bill is expected to pass both houses with Republican support, but its price tag has dampened enthusiasm on both sides of the aisle. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had, and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK, 1-800-NATPARK. There's just too much to lose.
A Nevada man was feeling so wealthy after he allegedly stole $90,000 from an elderly woman that he decided to pay off a year's worth of his rent. He tried to pay it off in $50,000 cash to his landlord, a Reno police officer. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
You've probably never heard of Mr. Wally Odell or of his corporation, Diebold, Inc. But Odell and his firm are reaching out and touching you and millions of your fellow Americans in a most fundamental way. Diebold has become one of America's largest sellers of touchscreen computer voting equipment. Most states have converted from real ballot boxes to these virtual systems provided by outfits like Diebold. Instead of physically marking your ballots, now you touch the screen to make your choices and, supposedly, the touchscreen technology magically transfers your vote into cyberspace. But what about real space? Growing numbers of Americans are alarmed by evidence that these computerized systems can be easily manipulated to steal our votes. Various organizations of computer professionals have called for stringent new reforms to protect our precious right of voting from the thieves who would loot our votes from these untraceable cyber boxes. Public concern has been heightened by revelations that the biggest providers of digital voting technology are strong partisans and major backers of the Republican Party. At the top of this list is Odell. He's had security concerns raised about his voting computers, even as he has been soliciting big donations for the election of George W. In August, Wally jetted down to Bush's ranchette in Crawford, Texas, for a presidential powwow with GOP fundraisers who have committed to raising big bucks for Bush's campaign. The very next week, Odell sent out letters asking for $10,000 donations for the Republican Party. And only one day later, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio blessed Wally's company with official authorization to provide electronic voting machines in Ohio. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn how you can help to stop electronic voting fraud, go to www.verifiedvoting.org.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this. And
here's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy. On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, and believers in the American way. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, streaming live across the planet. Coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations here in the United States, streaming from radiopower.org and other fine radio stations on the internet, and also streaming from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. What are the cons up to now? What is going on? Pat Leahy had some explicit thoughts, or explicit, specific, whatever. Thoughts on this this whole $87 billion thing here.
If those tax breaks are at least held up, they're not going to have increased taxes, but hold up the tax breaks for a few years, you can pay for much of what we're doing in Iraq. Otherwise, we're going to say...
Whoops. Sorry. What happens when you try to do two things at one time? It melts down. It melts down every single time. So anyhow, let me get back here to Pat Leahy, and because this is really worth hearing.
Those tax breaks are at least held up, they're not going to have increased taxes, but hold up the tax breaks for a few years, you can pay for much of what we're doing in Iraq. Otherwise, what we're going to say is for every school we build in Iraq, those are schools we can't build in the United States. For every hospital we build in Iraq, that's hospitals we can't build here. And for every college scholarship we give in Iraq, that's college scholarships we can't give in the United States. I think that's wrong.
Yeah. My Senator, Patrick Leahy, from Vermont, United States Senator Patrick Leahy, there is a problem, as they say. Then, of course, we're back to Joe Wilson, you know, in our question for this hour. You know, what are the cons up to, and what are your thoughts on it? By the way, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Joe Wilson has some opinions about what's going on in the White House and what's coming out of it.
But we'll see. I mean, I don't think we're going to let this drop. At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
Yeah, and do we agree? Do we really agree? And maybe some more? Yeah. Okay. All right. Really, Karl Rove, is that who you mean? Karl?
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Oh, okay. All right. So Joe Wilson, quite serious there about having Karl Rove frog-marked out of the White House in handcuffs. Tom Daschle weighed in on this yesterday. The senior Democrat at the United States Senate, Tom Daschle. See, they're just hoping this will go away. I mean, this administration has been so successful at deflecting scandal after scandal by changing the topic. And this is happening right now, by the way. I mean, I'll finish Daschle's. Well, here's Daschle's thing. I'm mixing my thoughts up. The senior Democrat in the United States Senate, Tom Daschle, said he would ask the Central Intelligence Agency Director, George Tenet, to assess the potential damage from the controversy over the leaked name of an agent. And you know, it goes beyond that. I mean, you know, he's saying, who might have died? I mean, how many millions of dollars did the CIA spend setting up this front organization, this front corporation that Valerie Plame worked for years, as you know, and a whole bunch of other CIA agents, how many people were compromised? How many agents were murdered as a result of her being outed? Turns out nobody has looked into this yet. Or if they have, nobody's talking about it. Tom Daschle wants to know. I'd like to know, too. I'd say that either they're with us or against us, right? I mean, you know, either they're going to find out who's trying to harm American democracy or they're not. As that great American said, what's his name, that great American, he said...
either with us or against us. You're either evil or you're good.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. There you go. Thank you, George. You know, we have to keep this in mind. So I remember where I was going with that thing, the changing the topic. Haven't you found it interesting that this administration is not only launching a charm offensive about Iraq, but doing so, and it's really remarkable. I mean, they have all of these folks who have their talking points absolutely memorized, and they've been on is 2 weeks now, and they've kicked the president's approval ratings up 6 points so far, from 50% to 56%, and so it's working. And they have these guys on, men and women on these on various TV and radio shows, and no matter what question is asked, it comes back around to, well, things in Iraq are really better than you thought. But the strategy that they're pursuing is not just to get out the positive message, in my opinion. It is to change the topic from the CIA leaks, from the disasters in Iraq, from the non-located weapons of mass destruction, from the lies that were told to get us into this war, from the billions, the tens of billions of dollars that are being given to the friends of this administration, the Halliburtons and the Bechtels, the hundreds of millions that are being made in profit. All these news stories were coming out, and the folks in the White House, the White House spinmeisters, and they are very, very good. I mean, these people really know what they're doing. They said, we got to change the message. We've got too much going on out there. People saying things about this administration that are harming us. I mean, and you could see the president's approval ratings were dropping. So they said, we need to change the conversation. But my suggestion, I mean, observing this, and perhaps my eye as an observer is a little different from a typical observer. First of all, I've been in the media. I mean, I'm a published author. I've got 14 books in print. I'm a columnist for a website. I've been published in over 200 publications. I was contributing editor to 7 different magazines. I worked for 7 years in radio news. So I have that viewpoint. And I was the CEO, the president of a small advertising agency and PR firm, one in Michigan and one in Atlanta, Georgia. The one in Atlanta is still around and doing well. And so looking at this with my PR hat on and understanding how PR people understand how the press works. See, what here's the thing that confounded me at first was, why are they announcing to the press that they're going to go around the press? Why are they announcing a charm offensive when that's going to antagonize the press? Why not just do it? Why announce that you're doing it? Why announce it as a strategy? It's just going to, you know, the announcement itself is going to create controversy. It's going to upset the press. It's going to put them on the defensive. They're going to be trying to prove their own point, some of them, and others are going to be agreeing, and you're going to create a battle, a food fight. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, that's exactly what they want. That's exactly what they want. They want a food fight in the press because that will be sufficiently distracting. See, just saying, hey, things are going pretty good in Iraq, that's not sufficiently distracting. But saying, we're going to engage in a strategy to get around and behind and over the heads of, to quote George Bush, the media. We're going to engage in a strategy to get around you guys that will generate enough controversy to change the subject. This administration has been so good. They keep things in their back pocket until they need them. The last terrorist suspect that was caught. Turns out that you know, they broke the story right in the middle of another administration scandal. The whole thing with Halliburton was coming out, and boom, all of a sudden, we've got a terrorist suspect, somebody who was a part of Al-Qaeda. Turns out he had been arrested 2 months earlier. And they just kept it in their back pocket until they needed it. These people, they are playing the media like a cheap violin, and they're doing it so well. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number if you have thoughts on this, if you'd like to call the program. Well, that's 1-800-825-5937. And Lois in Berkeley, California is on the line. Lois, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello. Yes, I wanted to ask, I heard on the Internet that Saddam was going to start taking euros for his oil instead of American dollars, and that had a whole lot to do with the reason we fought in Iraq, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Lois. Yeah, the reality is that Saddam had announced, or had announced through Tariq Aziz, as I recall, within the year before the war, before the invasion, perhaps even more recently, perhaps as little as 6 months, but I think it was a little farther out, that he was considering taking euros instead of dollars, and there were a bunch of different theories about this. One was that he was doing this as a way of thumbing his nose at America. Another, because it really wouldn't have had that much impact at that point, because he had these prohibitions from exporting, the embargo. He was embargoed. And so, you know, some saw it as a symbolic act. Others, though, noticed that Saddam had a lot of allies with regard to his position that the embargo should be lifted. Iraq, 15 years ago, was one of the more prosperous nations in the Middle East, and it was the only one where women had the right to work, where they didn't have to wear a veil or a burqa, where they could drive, where they could vote, as I recall. It was where they could attend college, attend free schools. It was essentially, Iraq was essentially the only secular, the only secular government that was running in the Arab Middle East. And that's why George Herbert Walker Bush, when Saddam was our ally, held him up. It's why Donald Rumsfeld, whenever you see those pictures on TV of Don Rumsfeld shaking Saddam's hand, it was, you know. And so some people think that that you had Germany and Russia in particular, and France, who had contracts with Iraq, who had already signed contracts. You can find these. This came out of the Dick Cheney secret meetings with Enron back before 9/11. You can find these on JudicialWatch.org's website. They got them by lawsuit. So France, Germany, and primarily France and Russia had already cut these deals with Iraq to export the oil, and they were arguing in the Security Council that the embargo against Iraq should be dropped. Now, if that happened and Saddam denominated in euros, it could be a disaster for the United States, like the one I described in the last hour. And there is a bunch of people who are, you know, of the conspiracy theorist type, I would say, who believe that that's the reason that we attacked Saddam. And it may be possible. I suspect that was just one more in a long list of what the neocons consider to be good reasons to take him out. I don't think that was the main reason. But it's an interesting one, and the mythology of it might be one of the reasons why Putin hasn't taken his action faster, because he doesn't want to make that much of an enemy of us that fast. This is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? Stay tuned.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here again to tell you about InPhone. I hate asking people for directions. It's embarrassing. So instead, I call InPhone. And the nice operator at InPhone gives me driving directions, phone numbers, movie times, or restaurant reservations. So cling to your independence like I do. Call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Jesse sent you. Call now. InPhone. How can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
The following conversation is real. It took place on April 12th, 2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Center, this is Orlando. How may I help you?
Hi, my name is Stacey Noble, and someone broke into my back window.
Okay, did you call the police? You're my first phone call.
When you have OnStar, no matter where you go, a live advisor is available to help 24 hours a day.
Okay, what I'll do is contact the police and I'll conference you.
Okay.
Police 911 emergency.
Hi, my name is Orlando. I'm calling from OnStar.
I have a subscriber on our line whose vehicle was vandalized. Now, conference her in, that way she can get more information from her.
Thanks a lot.
Hello, Mrs. Noble. I do have police on the line.
Hi, Mrs. Noble. What happened?
Well, I parked the car at the intersection of Ordway.
OnStar is available on the Saturn View, Ion, and L series. To learn more, visit your Saturn retailer or Saturn.com.
Was there anything else I can do for you at this time, Mrs. Noble?
I just love you so much. I can't even believe how many times I've been thankful for OnStar.
If you need any more assistance from us, just go ahead and give us a call.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
OnStar. Always there. Always
ready. If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We've covered a lot of territory here in the last couple of hours. This whole situation with oil and the price of oil, the militarization of America, the failed policies of the Bush administration, belligerence and unilateralism, what might Russia be planning to do? What are the cons up to now? I want to spend the last half of the show, or the last half of this hour here, the last third of the show, last sixth, whatever it is, just kind of wrapping up with the news and you know what we're seeing out there, what the conservatives are up to, because in this vast agenda that they have of stealing democracy from we the people and handing it to corporate elites and the wealthiest in America. You say, oh, wait a minute, that sounds like class warfare. Yes, they declared class warfare on us aggressively with the Reagan-Bush administration. And this administration is perpetrating class warfare at levels that are mind-boggling. If you are wealthy enough to make your living by sitting on your butt and getting dividend checks from corporations in which you own stock, then you pay no payroll tax whatsoever, which somebody working minimum wage at the gas station on the corner has to pay. You pay none. And you pay 15% income tax. I mean, you don't think that's class warfare. I mean, that's incredible. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Adrian in Melbourne, Australia is on the line. Adrian, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. I thought I'd give you a call. It's a little bit early for me, but I thought I was listening to your show and I couldn't help but thought I'd get out of bed with my laptop and give you a call.
That's great. I saw you in the chat room and I mentioned you last hour. What time is it there in Melbourne?
Well, I don't know how many minutes it is past the hour, but it's 4 a.m. something. So
yeah.
4:15, I imagine.
4:26.
Yeah, 4:26.
There you go. Yep. So what's up?
Well, I was just thinking before, you talked about how the Bush administration is doing such a great job with their PR, and one thing that I think lots of people forget is that how the Office of Strategic Influence was sort of set up, and the New York Times reported it, and of course Rumsfeld said how it had to shut down, but then he comes out later on in a you know, Department of Defense transcript saying that, you know, you can have blood, but I'm still going to run the program. You know what it was intended to do.
Oh, I completely forgot about that. The Office of Strategic Influence, the super secret within the Pentagon, super secret the propaganda machine.
Exactly. Now that got reported on the 19th of February 2002. So you know this thing's been planned a long time.
Amazing.
Yeah. So amazing. I was just listening. So I thought I'd better call up and just remind you about it.
Yeah. In fact, let me make a big note about that, OSI. Tell me, how is the Australian press treating George Bush?
Well, we've got obviously our liberal press, and they would treat George Bush, I guess, like most liberal press would, with some sort of criticism. But the mainstream sort of press is just sort of towing the very patriotic line, following John Howard's sort of strategic decisions, and therefore whatever John Howard does, George Bush would equally be welcomed, because John Howard seems to be following whatever George Bush decides to do. So, for instance, when Bush comments about gay marriage, the next day John Howard's coming out and talking about gay marriage as well. So it's the same sort of situation, I guess.
Does Rupert Murdoch own the main newspaper there? Is that the Australian? Is that the national newspaper?
The Australian is one of the national newspapers, and he's the owner of that,
Yeah, that's what I thought. The last time I was there, I remember reading it and thinking, boy, this thing has a right-wing edge to it.
The Australian definitely does.
Now, wasn't John Major just attacked or censured or something in the Senate? We've got about 10 seconds here for going to war with no good reason.
John Major, well, that's what the Bush administration had called him, but obviously his real name's John Howard, so I don't know how they
John
made
Howard,
that mistake.
I'm sorry. Howard, yes. He just got nailed, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, but that wasn't as reported very widely.
Okay. Adrian, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's been said that the early bird gets the worm. The late one might choose the nut. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. People are able to recall vividly what they've done in the past as well as plan for the future. This ability to visualize experiences and imagine outcomes is called episodic memory. Scientists had long believed that episodic memory was found only in humans. Nicola Clayton is a neurobiologist at the University of Cambridge. She says animals were thought to be stuck in the present time, unable to recall the past or plan ahead.
So whereas you and I can travel mentally back in time and think about a past event, what you did last birthday or even what you had for dinner last night, and equally we can go forwards in time and imagine what we're going to do tonight, this weekend, for our next holiday or whatever, then animals can't do that. They're bound to the present.
Clayton has found evidence that some birds are not so time-bound. She devised an experiment involving scrub jays. These small birds hide their food in order to recover it later, a process called caching. They apparently remember details about the food they hide. Clayton observed that the jays, when given nuts and worms to cache, would recover only the non-perishable nuts after being separated from the food for long periods. They didn't bother to look for the worms.
It seems to be the exact opposite of being stuck in time, because the animals have got to go back and remember where they put their caches, and equally at the time that they're hiding this food, they've got to think about the future.
In other words, Clayton says the experiment shows that scrub jays possess episodic memory. It also seems to prove that while the early bird gets the worm, the late one opts for food with a longer shelf life. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show,
where we serve you food with attitude plus a heaping helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Truths that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Up on IE's homepage, the question for the day is, I don't have it right in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing, but essentially, if Rush Limbaugh turns out actually was in possession of illegal narcotics, and it seems that that's the case, but right now it's an accusation, should he be prosecuted? And you can vote yes or no at www.ieamericaradio.com. Be sure to put the radio in there, otherwise you get a wonderful spam site. IEAmericaRadio.com, and you can vote on that issue right there on the homepage. Love to know what your thoughts are on this. Let's figure out what the listeners to this network have in terms of an opinion on this topic. What are the conservatives up to now? First of all, number one, the Office of Strategic Disinformation, changing the topic from Intimidate and Halliburton, which is why they announced it as a strategy, to what's going right in Iraq. That's right. This has got to be one of the more cynical attempts. Now, the reality is that the media always portrays what's going wrong and never portrays. When was the last time you that's actually what we expect? I mean, that's the baseline, the norm. When was the last time that you turned on a news report and heard, we had a beautiful day in the city today, and nobody got mugged? Or in New York today, nobody was murdered. I mean, you know, it's just... It's crazy. Back in the days when I used to do a lot of international travel, and I used to travel in third world countries, it used to amaze me how people, and not just third world countries, but you know, conflict zones, let's say. It used to amaze me how people would perceive things. I was down in Bogota, Colombia. And the week that I was, I've been there many times, but the last time I was there, I was there for about a week and a half. And there were three major bombings in downtown Bogota. And each time, you know, people here, you know, friends of mine are, you know, they're calling up Louise, you know, is Tom okay? What's it? You know, because, you know, 8 people died, 15 people died, 30 people died in a car bombing in downtown Bogota. This was maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, during the big, you know, the height of the drug wars there. And, you know, I was in the city all that time, and I was clueless. I read about it in the newspaper. I mean, you know that this is going on, but it's like, it was not a big deal. It was not a big deal. You know, life goes on. Louise and I were in Israel when the driving up in the middle of the West Bank when the last Intifada started. We drove through Nablus that day. The kids were throwing stones at cars. You know, big deal. We many times have been in Israel when there have been terrorist events or whatever you want to call it that have happened, and it's like life goes on. You know, one little part of an area. So yes, of course, much of Iraq is probably stable and quiet, but that's not news. The same is true of Israel. But you don't hear on the news. Well, tonight much of Israel was stable and quiet. No, you don't hear that. Because the news's job isn't to report when things are going well. It's to report when there's a problem. But anyhow, that's not the issue of this administration. They're not trying to get the good news. I mean, certainly they want to get the good news out. Yes, absolutely. But their main thing is to change the subject away from Joe Wilson and the CIA leaks and Halliburton's obscene profits and the Intimidate scandal, as it's being called, and all of these other things that we're just starting to catch up with them. They just needed to change the agenda, and they have successfully done that. Really quite remarkable. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have thoughts on this, on the events of the day, on what the cons are up to now, Jim in Cleveland, Ohio is on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Jim?
Very good. You know, good. I get the opinion, and I've had this for a long time, that the Bush administration is just laughing at us. And that they're playing this big game. And I believe the end game is, number one, to get this guy reelected. And I believe that when that happens, we'll be going into Syria and probably Iran. And I believe the end game is to destroy the economic fiber of this country. I believe they're trying to destroy the country. And I've always thought this. And it's like they're laughing at us. I don't know. Maybe I'm paranoid, but I tell you, it's strange to me what they're doing to us. I just can't figure out where they're going.
Well, it's a new feudalism, Jim. Let me explain. It's very straightforward. It's very simple. And you know, some of them, I'm sure, are laughing all the way to the bank. But I don't think that these folks are quite as malicious as you think. I think that they're looking out for their own. But what's going on is that historically, stable governments have been ruled by powerful elites. And if you look at the 7,000-year history of civilization, with the exception of almost a little over 225 years in Athens, Greece, in the Athenian democracy era, and a little over 225 years here in North America, in the United States, there has been no government of, by, and for the people that has survived more than 250 years. And out of those 7,000 years, it's always been either warlord kings, which have been fairly frequent, but they haven't been the most common form of government, or theocracies, where you have popes or mullahs or ayatollahs who rule the people, but they haven't been the most powerful, most consistent, and most stable form of government. Or you have feudal aristocracies, where the feudal powers, feudalism essentially could be defined as rule by the rich. There's a big argument among feudal scholars about whether it requires land-based allegiance or not, but it's just the bottom line is rule by the rich. And in fact, the Magna Carta was not, people say the Magna Carta was the first, the beginning of the Bill of Rights. It was the first giving of human rights to humans. Well, no. The Magna Carta was where the king had to bow to the feudal lords of England and say, okay, you guys, you have these rights that I can't touch. You have more power than I do in all these areas. It was the ordination, the sanctification of feudalism, and the recognition of feudalism in Europe. And there are people on the right who, some of them for probably noble cause, believe that if the United States in a dangerous world, and I think there are people out there who have this kind of dangerous world worldview who think that everybody is out to get us and we have to be bigger and badder and stronger, and a lot of these people were probably abused as kids or nutrient deficient or whatever, and they've got this bizarre view of the war, they've never traveled internationally, they really don't know what the world is like, and they're in this kind of paranoid worldview. And, you know, everybody's out to get us. And so they think that the only way for the United States to survive is for there to be a feudal ruling class, ruled by the rich. And they subscribe to the Calvinistic notion, the old Calvinistic religion that was very popular when the United States was first settled in the 1600s and the early 1700s, that wealth means a blessing by God.
I just keep thinking that when all of this is over with, there's going to be a very select few people that's going to be left with all the money.
That's the direction they're moving, and that's what they want. I mean, they think that's a good thing.
It's a systematic transfer to the wealthy, and we're going to be left holding the bag and scraping up peanuts to eat. And yeah. You know, I mean, I'm just very concerned about what's happening, and I just hope people continue to listen to your program and others like you. And learn to pick up a book and a magazine and a newspaper and read. And personally, I think that what's happened to Rush Limbaugh is the best thing that could ever happen to the guy. I hope he crashes and burns. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Jim, thanks. Thanks for sharing. You have done a marvelous job, Jim, in Cleveland, Ohio, of articulating the conservative agenda in the United States, and that is the evisceration of the middle class, the destruction. See, about the only thing left that stands between the cons and their complete seizure of American democracy through the use of corporations primarily, about the only thing that stands between them and us is organized labor. That's about it. And you go, well, you know, labor unions are, you know, waste. Yeah, of course, you can find a few problems here and there anywhere. Any organization is going to have some problems. Jimmy Hoffa was a crook. Yeah, every organization has a few bad apples. But the bottom line is that the vast majority of people involved in organized labor in the United States are hardworking, ethical, above board, straight on, stand up people. And the labor movement in the United States, mark my words, this is it, is the only thing that's standing between you and me and a complete takeover by these cons through corporate power. And George Bush is doing everything he can. The hidden agenda behind the agenda, and then people in the labor movement will know well about this, but the average American, I think, is blissfully unaware that the reason why George Bush wants to transfer 800,000 federal employees from the federal civil service workforce into private industry is not to increase efficiency. That's not going to happen. It's actually going to cost more. Because the private industry is going to have to take their piece of the action. They have to show a profit. It's not to increase security. It's going to diminish security. Private corporations have rights of privacy and things. They have access to, you know, and you're going to bring them into government agencies? No, you're going to diminish the security. You're going to diminish safety. You're going to increase costs. Well, why do it then? Why? Because the government employees union, I forget the exact name of it and the acronym, but the union represented by government employees, federal government employees, is one of the larger and stronger ones in the United States. And George Bush wants to destroy it. This administration has declared war on labor, and it's not just this administration. It is this is the key to and the heart of the conservative agenda, and they try to spice it up and make it all kinds of pretty by talking about right to work and individual liberties. And oh, don't you want to have cheap stuff at Walmart? I mean, you've got to be able to get your cheap stuff at Walmart. If you don't, your cost of living's going to go up. Well, yeah. If we had more union jobs here in the United States, and more of the things that we're buying in our stores that are imported from China were made here in the United States, they would cost more. Yes, absolutely. And your paycheck would be so much larger that you could easily afford them. Oh, how can you say that? Minimum wages cause unemployment. Nonsense. I look at the real economic studies that have been done. Minimum wages not only don't increase unemployment, they increase employment, and they improve the economy, the minimum wage law. Just think about it for a minute. Just consider the logic of this. You've got Phil Knight, the guy who owns Nike, who has become a multi-millionaire, a billionaire perhaps. In fact, I think somebody said once he was worth $6 billion. I don't know his net worth. But anyhow, he's worth a fortune. That's money that if those shoes had been made in the United States, would have been distributed among American workers. When Nike starts making their shoes in Indonesia, do they reduce the price in the United States? No. They increase the profits to the corporations. There are exceptions, of course. You can buy cheap stuff in Walmart that was made in China, and that stuff would be more expensive if it was made in the United States. But an awful lot of the stuff that you buy in the United States. Look at all your brand name, all your designer stuff. Go into Saks Fifth Avenue, walk through some of the fancy stores, and look at your designer label clothing. And notice where it's made. And notice that you're still spending $600, $800, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 for a dress or a suit. The labor is such a small percentage of the cost. Ben and Jerry, the ice cream guys, I think it was Ben Cohen of the two of them, started this thing out in California. They discovered that the amount of labor, the cost of labor that goes to make a T-shirt in Southeast Asia was like 10 cents, more or less. And if they made that same T-shirt at union wages with people who had health care and vacations and job security and pensions in Los Angeles, the labor cost would become 25 cents on a $10 T-shirt. So the cost of the T-shirt went from $10 to $10.25, and hundreds of people have jobs now because of it. And they said, this is crazy. The only reason that jobs are being exported is to increase the wealth of a small handful of very large corporations. Literally, we're talking a few hundred corporations, and probably fewer than 10,000 individuals are defining the values and direction of this nation. And they have their media lapdogs that they have on the chain of multi-million dollar salaries who are out there spouting this right-wing stuff and convincing the average person that it's in their interest that there not be minimum wage laws. Can you imagine? 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Mike in Milwaukee, New York. I didn't know there was a Milwaukee, New York.
Oh,
wants to weigh
Milwaukee,
in on this.
Wisconsin.
Oh, Wisconsin. Okay. Oh, New York Times. I didn't read the whole sentence there. I'm sorry, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. I was looking at AA batteries. I have a photography business, and I use a lot of AA batteries for equipment. And the Duracells and the Energizers are all made in China. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at the cheapest brand on the shelves, which was Rayovac. And I looked on the package, and they're made in the United States. Not only that, because I'm from Wisconsin, it stuck out that they were made in Wisconsin, right here in Wisconsin. And they were half, sometimes half the price of, and these are alkaline batteries. And then a lot of the tests that have been done on the batteries have determined that some of the off brands are longer lasting batteries than these major brands that are being sold. I wanted to make that point, but the other point.
Got about 5-10 seconds left here, Mike.
Check the New York Times out regarding the Indiana Department of Workforce Development. They just contracted with a company from India. They saved millions of dollars by having...
We'll check it out, and I'll report on it tomorrow, Mike.
Okay.
Mike, thank you very much for sharing that. I appreciate your call. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
In an interview with the Associated Press, Kennedy said the case for going to war against Iraq was a fraud made up in Texas to give Republicans a political boost, and the money for the war is being used to bribe foreign leaders to send troops. Well, Tom DeLay, the bug man. He reminds me so much of Dennis Hopper's character in Blue Velvet. Remember Frank Booth? What was he sucking? What was that, nitrous oxide? That's what DeLay reminds me of. Only DeLay wouldn't be doing nitrous oxide. DeLay would be doing one of those weird bug-killing chemicals, like parathion. You know, it's my understanding that stuff gets you real high right before it kills you.
That's the lowest thing I've ever heard. The lowest thing I've ever heard coming out of Kennedy's mouth.
This is the Frank Booth character from David Lynch's Blue Velvet. There's no question about that, True Seekers.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con and conservative, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. The survey on the website of www.ieamericaradio.com, the question is, if a Florida narcotics squad has proof that Rush Limbaugh was purchasing illegal narcotics, should Rush be prosecuted? 97% say yes, 2% say no. Interesting result there. And 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. We've got a couple minutes left in the program today. And Bob in Texas is on the line. Bob, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I'm the guy that called last week, and Bob from Texas, and you turned what I said into a spot for your radio show.
Oh, well, bless you, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll, you get send the residuals my way, okay?
Talk to the network.
Hey, listen, one of the things, what you were talking about, the prices and everything at Walmart, what I keep not understanding, Tom, is whenever you take a basic economics course, the first thing they say is prices are set not by the cost, but by the demand, supply and demand.
And the supply, right.
Right. And so if you can make something for 2 cents and sell it for $5,000, because of supply and demand, that's what you're going to do it for.
So right, you just control scarcity.
Labor costs don't set prices.
That's right, and the cons have completely befuddled the issue. That's why you can walk into Saks Fifth Avenue and find a piece of clothing that will cost $2,000 or $3,000 that was made in Indonesia that maybe cost $8 to make because they only made 8 of them.
Right, and whenever you raise labor costs, or lower labor costs like they're doing, it don't make things cheaper.
No, it increases profits.
It increases profits. And that's the big lie that's at the bottom of all of this. And every time that, you know, their costs go up, their labor costs, or they want somebody to have a raise or something, they're saying, well, geez, that'll raise our prices. No, that don't raise your prices at all.
Yeah. Now, the bottom line of the whole conservative agenda is cheap labor. That's their bottom line. Bob, thanks for the call. That music means that we're out of time. I appreciate your call, and thanks for the piece that we used. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson, Joe down in Atlanta, and engineered by Shar Jones in Detroit. Join us tomorrow, same time, same place.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.